T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Update and briefing on where we are today, and then we're going to go out and do some real work, get out of this building before we get cabin fever. You know the people who are here today. From my far right, Simonita Subotic, who is in charge of managing supplies, which is a major function for us. Robert Mojica, Director, Division of the Budget. Melissa DeRosa, Secretary to the Governor, great James Malatris, who's been of tremendous help here. Go through the facts. The numbers are still increasing. We have been seeing that. That's the line that we're tracking. This is all about the increase in the number of cases and managing to the increase in the number of cases to the capacity of our healthcare system. What are we doing? We're reducing the spread and the rate of the spread to match the increase in the number of cases and increasing hospital capacity at the same time. Just how do our hospitals manage the rate of the spread? We're trying to reduce the spread to over a period of months. Over a period of months, our healthcare system can deal with the numbers. We have moved to zero non-essential workers. You can't go below zero. So we're doing everything we can there. And we put out new rules on personal conduct and what people should be doing and how they should be behaving and where they should be. Matilda's Law, which is for the vulnerable population, senior citizens, people with compromised immune systems, underlying illnesses. That was very specific. As I mentioned, named it for my mother Matilda because I went through this with my own siblings. How do we help mom? Where do we bring mom? There was a difference of opinion. The best health professionals put together guidelines that can not only help senior citizens but also their families who are trying to deal with this. I know it was helpful to my family. And the question among siblings, these laws and guidelines answered. I don't want to mention which sibling, but turns out that he was wrong. The personal conduct rules and regulations are also very helpful. I want to thank Dr. Fauci, who is really an extraordinary American and has given me great guidance and help. And assistance in putting together these policies. So I'd like to thank him, and we're doing those. We're working on every level. Every piston is firing. Everything that can be done is being done. New Yorkers are lucky. We have a very experienced team that's doing this. This is not their first rodeo. They've been through a number of emergencies on a number of levels, increasing hospital capacity. We want to get the capacity of 50,000 up to a minimum of 75,000. We told the hospitals we're going to be ending elective surgeries. We are now working with hospitals to reconfigure the space in the hospital to get more beds and to find more staff to manage those beds. We're working on building new beds. We're going to go out and review a number of sites today. I'd like to get a final list to the federal government and the Army Corps of Engineers today. But we're looking at Javits, SUNY Stony Brook, SUNY Westbury, the Westchester Convention Center, and I'm going to go out and take a look at those sites today, or the ones I can get to. That would give us a regional distribution and a real capacity if we can get them up quickly enough. And then increasing supplies, which is one of the most critical activities. We are literally scouring the globe looking for medical supplies. We've identified 2 million N95 masks, which are the high protection masks. We have apparel companies that are converting to mask manufacturing companies in the state of New York in all sorts of creative configurations, and I want to thank them. I put out a plea yesterday to ask them for help, and we've been on the phone with all sorts of companies who are really doing great work. We're also exploring the state of New York manufacturing masks ourselves. We are going to send 1 million N95 masks to New York City today. That's been a priority for New York City. And 1 million masks won't get us through the crisis, but it'll make a significant contribution to New York City's mask issue. And I want to thank Mayor de Blasio for working in partnership. We're sending 500,000 N95 masks to Long Island. We've been working with County Executive Laura Curran and County Executive Steve Ballone, and I want to thank them. We're gathering ventilators. Ventilators are the most important piece of equipment and the piece of equipment that is most scarce. We're gathering them from all different health facilities across the state, and then we're going to use those in the most critical areas. We also identified 6,000 new ventilators that we can actually purchase. So that's a big deal. From the federal government's point of view, I've spoken to the president a number of times. I've spoke to the vice president a number of times. They've issued a federal disaster declaration, which is a technical act by the federal government. But what it basically does is it allows the Federal Emergency Management Agency, called FEMA, to step in and assist financially. By that declaration, FEMA would pay 75% of the cost of a disaster. New York City would pay 25. New York State would pay 25% of the cost. The federal government can waive the 25% of the cost. I'm asking them to waive that 25% in this situation. I've worked on many disasters. FEMA has waived the 25%. If there's any situation where FEMA should waive the 25%, this is the situation. We're also working with the federal government. We're requesting 4 field hospitals at 250 capacity each. That would give us 1,000 field hospital beds. We're going to be looking at Javits as a location for those field hospitals. We're also requesting 4 Army Corps of Engineers temporary hospitals. Those are the sites I mentioned earlier that I'm going to take a look at, the SUNY Stony Brook, Westbury, Westchester Convention Center, and also Javits. Javits is so big that it can take the 4 field hospitals and an Army Corps of Engineers temporary hospital. We're also requesting assistance with medical supplies, which has been a very big topic of conversation all across the country. And we're also asking our federal congressional delegation to fix a law that was passed on the coronavirus federal aid. Because of a technical issue, the way the bill was written, New York State does not qualify for aid. That's over $6 billion. That is a lot of money. And we need the federal delegation to fix that bill. Otherwise, New York State gets nothing. New York State has more coronavirus cases than any state in the United States of America. That we should not be included in the bill obviously makes no sense. We're also going to conduct immediately trials for the new drug therapy, which we have been discussing. I spoke to Dr. Zucker about it. There is a theory that the drug treatment could be helpful. We have people who are in serious condition, and Dr. Zucker feels comfortable, and as well as a number of other health professionals, that in a situation where a person is in dire circumstance, try what you can. The FDA is going to accelerate to New York 10,000 doses. As soon as we get those doses, we'll work with hospitals, doctors, and families on using those drugs and seeing where we get. The president I spoke to, he spoke to this drug therapy in his press conference yesterday. I spoke to him afterwards. I said that New York would be interested. Again, we have the most number of cases, and health professionals have all recommended to me that we try it. So we will try it. We're also working on a number of other drug therapies, an antibody therapy, possible vaccines. We have a company here in New York called Regeneron that is really showing some promising results. I've exempted them from the no work order because they could possibly have a really significant achievement for us. The new numbers, the more tests you take, the more positives you find. And I give this caution because I think people misinterpret the number of new cases. They take that number of new cases as if it is reflective of the number of new cases, the spread. It is not. The number of new cases is only reflective of the number of cases you are taking, right? Where our goal is to find the positive cases, because if we find a positive case, we can isolate that person and that stops the spread. So we're actually looking for positives. The more tests you take, the more positives you will find. We are taking more tests in New York than any place else. We're taking more tests per capita than China or South Korea. We're also taking more tests than any state in the United States of America. That is actually a great accomplishment. Because if you remember back 2 weeks, which seems like a lifetime now, the whole question was coming up to scale on tests. How do we get the number of tests up and how do we get it up quickly? I spoke to the president and the vice president and I said, decentralize the testing and let the states do it. I have 200 labs. I can mobilize quickly. Let us do the tests. They agreed. We're doing more tests than any state. So, for example, we've done 45,000 tests. California has done 23,000. Washington has done 23,000. So you see how many more tests we are doing. And again, I credit the team that's working here because this is exactly what the mandate was. Perform as many tests as quickly as you can. And that's the drive-through the drive-throughs we put in place, the hospital management, et cetera. So our numbers should be higher, and they are. Total number of positive cases now is up to 10,000. Number of new cases has increased by 3,000. Just go back in case you can't read as fast as I can't read. 6,000 in New York City, 1,300 in Westchester, 1,200 in Nassau. You see the Westchester number is slowing. We did a New Rochelle containment area. The numbers would suggest that that has been helpful. So I feel good about that. You see Nassau increasing. You see Suffolk increasing. So that's just the widespread increase that we have been anticipating. But our hotspot of Westchester is now slowing, and that's very good news. New York City, it is the most dense environment. This virus spreads in density, right? And that's what you're seeing in New York City. New York City obviously has many more people. than any other specific location in the state. Number of counties are increasing. You see the blue. I said to you early on that blue is going to take over the whole state, just the way every state in the United States has now been covered. Most impacted states, you look at the number in cases in New York is 10,000, Washington, California, 1,000 each. Does that mean we have 10 times the number of cases as California or Westchester? Or does that mean we're doing more tests than California or Westchester? The truth is somewhere in the middle, and nobody can tell you. Total number of people tested, we're up to 45,000. Number of new tests. This is a rate that we watch. What is the rate of hospitalization? Again, because this is all about hospital capacity, right? 1,600 out of 10,000, that's roughly 15% of the cases. It's been running about 14, 15. It's gone as high as 20%, 21%. So actually 15% rate of hospitalization is not a bad number. It's actually down from where it was. The more refined number is of those who are hospitalized, how many require the ventilators, because the ventilators are the piece of equipment that is most scarce. That's the next refinement of these numbers that we have to do. And again, the context on the numbers is important. We're talking 10,000, et cetera. You look at any World Health Organization or the NIH or whatever any of the other countries are saying, you have to expect that at the end of the day, 40% to 80% of the population is going to be infected. So the only question is, how fast is the rate to that 40% to 80%, and can you slow that rate so your hospital system can deal with it? That is all we're talking about here. If you look at the 40 to 80%, that means between 7.8 million and 15 million New Yorkers will be affected at the end of the day. We're just trying to postpone the end of the day so we can deal with the capacity. Again, perspective, Johns Hopkins. This is not a science fiction movie. You don't have to wait to the end of the movie to find out what happens. Johns Hopkins has studied every case since it started, 284,000, 11,000 deaths, almost 90,000 recoveries, 183,000 still pending, which tracks everything we know in the state of New York. Our first case, healthcare worker, 39-year-old female who was in Iran. She went home. She never went to a hospital. She recovered. She's now negative. You get sick, you get symptoms, you recover. That is true for the overwhelming number of people. Again, context. People who died in the flu, from the flu, in 2018, 2019. 34,000 Americans. 34,000. So when you hear these numbers of deaths, keep it in perspective. 34,000 people died of the flu. Over 65, 74% of the people were over 65. 25% were under 65. So if you have an underlying illness, you catch the flu, you can die. More likely, if you have an underlying illness, senior citizens, et cetera, but not necessarily. You have 25% under 65 years old die from the flu. Also, in terms of context perspective, don't listen to rumors. I mean, you have such wild rumors out there, and people call me with the craziest theories. I understand there's anxiety and stress, but let's remember some basic context and facts. Society functions. Everything works. There's going to be food in the grocery stores. There's no reason to buy 100 rolls of toilet paper. There really isn't. And by the way, where do you even put 100 rolls of toilet paper? The transportation system functions. The pharmacy system functions. These things are all going to work. Non-essential workers stay home, but the essential workers are staying home, especially the healthcare workers. There is not going to be any roadblock when you wake up in the morning that says you can't leave this place or you can't leave that place, right? So if you have a real question, because you think there's a real concern from a credible source, contact my team. We have a special website, coronavirus.health.ny.gov, and ask the question, and you will get a real, truthful, factual response. I have not hidden anything from the people of this state. I have not tilted facts. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the American people deserve the truth. They can handle the truth. Give them the truth. When they don't get the truth, and if you don't get the facts, that's when people should get anxious. If I think I'm being deceived, or there's something you're not telling me, or you're shading the truth, now I'm anxious. Everything I know, I've told you, and I will continue to tell you. And these are facts. And you hear a rumor, and you want to check it out, go to that website. These are people who work for me directly, and you will have the truth. We do have an issue with younger people who are not complying. And I mentioned this before, but it has not gotten better. You know, you can have your own opinion. You cannot have your own facts, okay? You want to have an opinion? Have an opinion. But you can't have your own facts. Well, young people don't get this disease. You are wrong. That is not a fact. 18 to 49 years old are 54% of the cases in New York State. 54%. 18 to 49 years old. So you're not Superman and you're not Superwoman. You can get this virus and you can transfer the virus and you can wind up hurting someone who you love or hurting someone wholly inadvertently. Social distancing works, and you need social distancing everywhere. There's a significant amount of noncompliance, especially in New York City, especially in the parks. I'm going to go down there today. I want to see what the situation is myself. But it has to be stopped because you are endangering people. And if it's because of misinformation, if it's because of noncompliance, I don't care, frankly. This is a public health issue, and you cannot endanger other people's health. You shouldn't be endangering your own, but you certainly have no right to endanger someone else's. This is my personal opinion. This is not a fact. You know, to me, it's very important that, especially in a situation like this, tell me the facts and then tell me your opinion. This is my opinion. We talk about social responsibility, especially young people talk about social responsibility, and they should. We pass a lot of legislation in this building, groundbreaking legislation, national firsts on economic rights, first highest minimum wage in the United States of America, human rights, first state to pass marriage equality, which I believe was a human rights issue. We talk about environmental responsibility. This state has the most aggressive environmental laws in the United States of America, and I am proud of it. But I also want people to think about the social responsibility when it comes to public health. We haven't talked about it before. It's not really a field. It's not really an issue. It's not really a hashtag. But social responsibility applies to public health just as it applies to human rights and economic rights and environmental rights. Public health especially in a moment like this, is probably most critical. So let's think about that, and let's act on that.
You're listening to Governor Cuomo in a news conference from Albany here on Tinted Winds.
We are all first responders. We are all first responders. Your actions can either save or endanger a life. So we are all first responders. What's going to happen? We're going to get through this. We don't know how long it is going to take us to get through this. Fact is, we're trying to slow the spread of the virus to a number of months so the healthcare system can deal with it. So therefore, by definition, it's going to be a number of months. I know people want to hear it's only going to be a matter of weeks and then everything's going to be fine. I don't believe it's going to be a matter of weeks. I believe it is going to be a matter of months. But we are going to get through it. And how long and how well it takes us to get through it is up to us. It depends on what we do. You know, when you're sick and you say to the doctor, well, how long until I get better? And the doctor says, well, it depends on what you do. If you follow the advice, you'll get healthy faster. But it depends on what you do. This depends on what we do. China is now reporting no new cases. Let's assume that's true. Look at that trajectory and look at that turnaround. Look at what they did, right? We do have data that we can follow. So how long is it going to take? It depends on how smart we are and how responsible we are and how diligent we are. You tell me the percentage of compliance and intelligence and discipline on social distancing, et cetera, I'll tell you how long it takes us to get through it. Also, something that people aren't really talking about, but I think we should start talking about. We talk about the economic consequences of this situation, and they are going to be significant, and we are going to have to deal with it, and New York will be right on top of it and as aggressive as we are with everything else. But economic consequences come second, right? First is dealing with this crisis. And we talk about the economic consequences, but we also need to talk about the social consequences. And it's hard to gauge and it's hard to measure because there is no Dow Jones index that we can watch on the screen that is measuring the social consequences and the social decline. But the stress, the anxiety, the emotions that are provoked by this crisis are truly significant. And people are struggling with the emotions as much as they are struggling with the economics. And this state wants to start to address that. I'm asking psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists who are willing to volunteer their time to contact the state. And if this works out, I would like to set up a voluntary network where people can go for mental health assistance, where they can contact a professional to talk through how they're feeling about this. They're nervous, they're anxious, they're isolated. Can bring all sorts of emotions and feelings to the surface. When you're isolated, you don't have people to talk to. So I'm asking the professional mental health establishment to contact us. Let us know if you're willing to volunteer time. It would obviously be all electronic. It wouldn't be in person. It would be over the telephone. It would be Skype, etc. But I'd ask you to seriously consider this. Many people are doing extraordinary things during this public health crisis. I'd ask the mental health community, many of them are looking for a way to participate. This is a way to participate. And if we get enough mental health professionals willing to volunteer their time, then we'll set up a mental health electronic help center. And we'll talk more about that in the next few days. What happens besides how long, what happens. The bigger question to me is, what do we learn about ourselves through this? As a society, we have never gone through this. Thank God, we haven't gone through a world war. We haven't gone through any great social crisis here in New York. We went through 9/11, which I think is relevant in terms of some feelings that are now people are experiencing. 9/11 transformed society. I was there. I was part of it. You were never the same after 9/11. You had a sense of vulnerability that you never had before, which I feel to this day. There was a trauma to 9/11. But as a society, as a country, we've been blessed in that we haven't gone through something as disruptive as this. So what do we learn about ourselves? And I think what we're seeing already is a crisis really brings out the truth about ourselves, first of all, and about others. And you see people's strength and you see people's weaknesses. You see society's strengths and you see society's weaknesses. You see both the beauty and the vulnerability. You see the best in people and you see the worst in people. You see people rise to the occasion and you see people fall from the burden of the emotion. So I think you take a step back. First, there are people who are doing extraordinary work who deserve our thanks. And when you see a healthcare worker on the way to work, when you see a grocer who's been working a double shift trying to deal with the demand in these stores, when you see a pharmacist who's overwhelmed with the long lines, when you see a police officer, firefighter, who they're out there doing their job, they're opening doors, they don't know who's on the other side of the door, they're walking up to car windows. These are just extraordinary heroes. Heroes. Ask yourself, would you do that? I mean, what kind of selflessness and courage? You talk about public service. What does public service mean? This is public service. This is public service in stereo and on steroids. These are people really stepping up. When you see them say, thank you. The bus drivers, the subway drivers, the public transit workers, these are people who are showing up, they're leaving their family, they are just as nervous as you are, but they're doing their job. Child care workers who are watching people's children so they can go work in a hospital or do their essential function. They deserve our thanks. And I think understanding what they do in some ways gives us a perspective on how beautiful people can be and how courageous people can be and how great Americans can be. And my last point is practice humanity. We don't talk about practicing humanity, but now if ever there's a time to practice humanity, the time is now. The time is now to show some kindness, show some compassion to people, show some gentility, even as a New Yorker. Yeah, we can be tough. Yes, this is a dense environment. It can be a difficult environment. It can also be the most supportive, courageous community that you have ever seen. And this is a time for a little gentility. It's a time for a smile when you're walking past someone. It's a time for a nod. It's a time to say hello. It's a time for patience. And don't let the little things get you annoyed. That's New York at its best. That was New York after 9/11. Yeah, we have a problem. Yes, we will deal with it. Yes, we will overcome it. But let's find our better selves in doing it. and let New York lead the way in finding their better selves and demonstrating their better selves. That's the New York destiny, and that's the New York legacy. And that's why I'm proud to be a New Yorker. That's why I'm proud to be the governor of this great state. And we're going to do it like we've always done it before. Questions?
Governor, on the 6,000 ventilators, where were those located and how soon could they be in hospitals in New York?
They were located in places all across the globe, Jesse. They are, they will be coming in over the next several weeks. We're also looking, by the way, at technologies that would allow you to use one ventilator for multiple patients, where one ventilator, for example, could serve two patients. So we're getting as creative and as aggressive as we can.
And can we assume that most of those would end up in New York City, considering that's where the bulk of the cases
are? They go where the cases go, yes.
Governor, I have a couple of questions with a very emotional doctor locally here in the 518 who tells me that they are out of hospital gowns, that they have no masks, that they are reusing hospital gowns that potentially could have been exposed to a patient with COVID-19 and without COVID-19. Response to that, message to them.
Look, this is a national problem, the medical supplies. States are scrambling all across the board. I'm proud of everything this state has done and the extraordinary efforts. As I told you, we have people on the ground in China. I'm calling people all across the world for these supplies. We have apparel companies that will go into the gown manufacturing business. We have to secure the material, which we're trying to do now. We're working on getting the New York State. New York State also manufactures uniforms. If I can get the material, we'll make them in the state. I have companies in New York where we're buying equipment, sewing equipment for them so they can manufacture them. But we have a gown shortage statewide.
I just have a couple questions.
It's not just Albany. It's worse than that. It's a gown shortage statewide. We're doing better with masks. We're doing better with ventilators. Nowhere near where we need to be with ventilators. We need 30,000 ventilators, so we're at 6,000. But at least we got the 6,000. The masks, the medical community has told me over and over again, the masks are the priority for the COVID-19. So we have made progress on masks. Gowns are also very important, no doubt. But we have not been successful as of yet with finding a supply of gowns, but we are searching high and low.
But with the number of masks, I think you said 2 million, right? The N95 masks, 1 million are going to the city. I forget the other numbers that you were saying, but what amount is staying here in upstate New York?
We have enough masks to handle all of upstate's needs.
What does that mean, enough?
The numbers are very different between Albany and New York City, right? So we do the allocation based on where the cases are. And New York City, Westchester, Nassau, Suffolk, that's the locus of the problem. Masks for upstate hospitals, we can address that. We can fill that need as of now.
I have a couple questions on testing. First of all, people are wondering, have you been tested?
Nope.
And why not?
Because I've not been exposed to anyone who is positive. I don't have a fever. I don't have any symptoms. And I don't want to waste the test.
And